call. I'm looking at 361.
Good morning. We're going to listen to some police officer life inputs from four different officers. And then after that, we're going to listen to an interview with the applicants that were announced.
So beginning with the, which is 2023. The body camera videos that were shown were obtained from various officers who were on scene on March 15th. So what we're going to hear is excerpts from those officers' body cameras.
Yes, ma'am. The first one we're going to listen to is from Officer Brendan Kaiser. Officer is the second one.
Audio recording of an interview with Detective Brad Hanks.
Yes, ma'am.
And who conducted that interview?
Louisville Metro Police Department's public integrity unit.
And when was it conducted?
March the 25th. And who's the best?
Sergeant Amanda Seeley, the Louisville Metro Police Department's public integrity unit. Today is Wednesday, March 23rd, 2020. The time is 15:16. We are present at 3672 Cannon Boulevard in the public integrity office. This will be a recorded statement from Detective Brett Hankinson. The statement is in reference to BIU case number 20-019. Present with me are Detective Brett Hankinson and Attorney Steve Shoring and Sergeant Jason Bates of the Public Integrity Unit. Detective, are you aware that this statement is being video and audio recorded?
Yes.
Is this being with your approval?
Yes.
Please say your full name and spell your last name.
Brett Hankinson, H-A-N-K-I-S-O-N.
What is your code number?
6150.
Where are you currently assigned?
The Criminal Interdiction Division.
How long have you been with that unit?
Since they were created, maybe a few months ago.
How long have you been with the department?
Since 2003.
Are you under the influence of alcohol, drugs, or any other intoxicants at this time?
No.
Are you taking any kind of medication that would affect your judgment or ability to think clearly?
No.
Next, several statements in reference to the incident that you're here for, March the 13th. That's from the spring of the arrest. Did you sustain any injuries during this situation?
No.
Did you receive any medical treatment?
No.
What type of uniform or clothing were you wearing at the time of this incident?
I was wearing an LMPD tactical vest, and I believe on the front of it it says police K-9, and then I believe it says police again. It's the heavy-duty ones that we're issuing.
Do you have on the same uniform or clothing right now?
I do not.
Because the statutory requirements of KRS 67C-326, I am obligated to advise you the constitutional rights prior to making any further questions.
One of the back questions, sorry, but I also had a full gun belt on too, with like my taser and all that equipment. Just, okay. It doesn't have any other identifiers on it, so.
Okay. Before you answer any questions, you must understand your rights. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say and will be used against you in the court of law. You have the right to talk to a lawyer prior to any questioning or making of any statements. And we have no present with you while you're being questioned. Cannot afford to hire a lawyer, one will be appointed by the court to represent you before any questioning you desire one. You may stop the questioning or make any statements at any time by refusing to answer further or by requesting to consult with an attorney prior to continuing with questioning or making the statements. The bottom line, you signed this, you read the statement, you wrote your right, you understand what your rights are, you're willing to make a statement and answer questions. You have a lawyer with you present at this time. You understand what you're doing. No promises or threats have been made to you, and no pressure or coercion of any kind have been used against you.
Different platoons were really not so much involved in other platoons' investigations, I guess. So I didn't know anything about the specifics of the investigation other than they just needed a dog, which I have, and being a narcotics canine handler, and then I knew they were short on bodies, so they needed that. Met at the division that night, I want to say it was around 10 or 11 at our office at Ormsby in the Lord Conference Room. We were briefed on the specifics, targets, guns, just the normal stuff. On the board, it was already written out for us, the address, that type of stuff, and what locations they had broken each, I guess, each location of the specific people that were assigned to search, to make entry to search that were responsible for that, that residence. I think the place-based platoon had like one detective at least assigned to each place, and they were going to be the, I guess, the lead detective in each of those spots. So I was already on the board for the Springfield address, along with the other detectives I'm sure you're aware of, and we proceeded from the office to St. Andrews and St. Anthony. I believe it's a church that's near the corner there. And we sat up there. Somebody had already advised, had already notified EMS, rather, to have an EMS wagon standing by. And I was actually, I think, the last one to arrive in the parking lot there at the church. EMS was already there, the wagon was already there. And then I think Lieutenant Hoover and all the rest of the detectives were there. They had told us previously that we were going to execute the warrant simultaneously or just after the execution of the ones on Elliott. So we basically just listened to the radio and SWAT was getting ready to hit those locations on Elliott, and we were to move up and do the location on Springfield. We proceeded up the hill, parked. I parked in just a regular parking spot. Some other officers had parked in the middle of the parking lot. And I parked just, I guess, north of the building, maybe 5 or 10 spots. Left my dog in the car. My dog was never out of the car. He was in his kennel. And that's commonplace. Our dogs are single-purpose dogs. They're not patrol duties. They're responsible for narcotics detection only. So they're not trained to make entry or to chase people or anything like that. Dog is in his kennel the whole time. We line up and head towards the building, and I believe Officer Detective Campbell, I think he was the VO for the location, because I had never been there. So he showed us the building and the door. We made our way through the common area, I guess, of the fourplex, and past a stairwell, and then the stack kind of lined up there. I don't remember who was in front of me, but there was a few detectives in front of me. I was kind of towards the back, but it was banging on the wall or the door, both. Yelling police search warrant. Myself, I don't know if I'm on Metro Police or if I just yelled police search warrant numerous times. And he was actually banging, I think, on the side of the door, because I think the whole building was like, there was a loud percussion. In that time, and I don't know who the gentleman's name was, I came out from an apartment directly above him. It was an African-American gentleman, maybe in his 50s. And he wondered what was going on. I addressed him, because I was kind of farther back on the stack, so I could still see up the stairway to him. I spoke with him and explained, you know, we were police and to go back in his apartment. He kind of like wanted to argue, I think, like, what is this about? I think he wanted a bigger, more in-depth explanation, but we're obviously still banging on the door. Whoever was up front was knocking on the door of the wall, and I think he went back in, but Sergeant Magley actually said, just forget, or don't talk to him, or just leave him alone, or whatever, ignore him. Something of that nature, I don't remember his exact words. And so then, continue knocking, yelling, police search warrant, and this went on for probably 30, 45 seconds of banging and announcing, knocking and announcing. And reason for this, I believe when we were briefed, at the top of the board there was it says no knock warrants. I think that was because of the propensity for violence. I think that the other locations, the guns that were found prior. I think of the violent history. I think this was, this address was also a no-knock. However, we were told this would be a female was there. They knew a female suspect. Somebody said she was heavy set. I don't recall her name, but she resided at that location. And that's all I know. Didn't know anything about kids or dogs or anything like that. Back to knocking, continue to knock and announce. Detective Nobles had the ram. And I was actually behind him, Sergeant. So the doors where you were at, I was to the right. Sergeant Manley, Tony James, I believe, and Lieutenant Hoover were here. I was second, kind of behind them, back towards Detective Campbell. I don't recall where that number was decided, sort of somewhere, but I don't remember the exact how, because it was really weird, because when you go into the door or the common area, you can't, it's not a breezeway that goes all the way through, it just goes up, so we're kind of stuck in this. The people on this side of the door that usually stay, we'll have a cover one, cover two, on each side of the door, and then we'll have our entry, two people that will come, one and two after. We couldn't really do that because there's nowhere for them to stand on the left side of the door like we would at any other place, or at a normal, say, a regular standing room dwell. So we were just kind of bunched up there in that little corner of the, I guess it's not really a breezeway, but that area, the common area. Detective Nobles began hitting the door with the ram, hit it at least two times, and I want to say the third or fourth time, he hit it. You could tell, in fact, it was starting to buckle, or the, it was buckling near the hinges, and then the third time it went all the way through, the door came open, and I don't recall if the door came left or right, but I guess that's wrong. The point I'm making, he made entry. The guy with the ram will always immediately come back out. That way he's not in the way, holding the ram with nothing to protect himself, no shield, no firearm out or anything like that, because he literally is committed to the ram. So he hit the ram the third or fourth time, and then he spun back towards the parking lot away so we could funnel in. And I kind of came around him. I remember coming around him like a clockwise direction, and I already had my gun out ready and had it raised, or in the ready position rather, here, like, I guess 45 degree angle. And that's when I saw darkness in the apartment, but then I saw an immediate illumination of fire come, and what I saw at the time was a figure in a shooting stance, and it looked as if he was holding, he or she was holding an AR-15 or a long gun, a rifle type of gun. And a couple of things, I guess, my brain processed to understand that was that the large muzzle flash looked like a large muzzle flash from a rifle. The loud percussion I got from it, and then the way he was holding the gun, or appeared to be the way he was holding the gun, like we would if we were at the range, or whatever. The best way to describe it is, to me, when I guess how my mind processed it was we were at the range shooting targets, and you know how they will literally have the targets turn, and it's either a bad guy or a good guy, you don't know, and they'll threaten. And it was literally, I saw that threat, target, and then the muzzle flash from the gun. I don't recall if I fired as I was going back, but I knew where we were at was the worst place you could be, period. There was no other, and it's described, I guess, as a fatal fight on the academy, but that's exactly what it was. There was nowhere really for us. We were all kind of trapped in that the common area, because you're in the parking door behind us, and then a wall here, door in front of us, where the threat's at, and the only way to exit is back towards the parking lot. So in my mind, I need to get out of there as quickly as possible. So I spun out and ran directly back towards where we came from the parking lot area, back that, I guess, path of the cyclone, past the past the doorway, or I'm sorry, past the stairwell, the common stairwell. As I made the corner to my left, because I'm trying, I never looked back, which may have been a mistake, but I never looked back to Sergeant Mattingly or Lieutenant Hoover. I just heard John say he was hit, or maybe someone said I'm hit or he's hit. I don't recall exactly which. And then the firing had gone back and forth. I guess I skipped all that. I can hear the firing as I'm making the corner. Now I can see, as I now have a better view, I can hear them say he's down or John's down. Almost at the same time, I guess, as I'm rounding that corner. So John said he was down or said I'm hit. And then it almost is like the firing went from boom, 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 boom at the door, or when I'm clearing that hallway, to it sounded like rapid fire from like an AR-15, which in my mind at the time aligned perfectly with what I had seen. I thought I saw a rifle, or I thought I saw someone in a shooting stance with a rifle, you know, with the left hand on the gun and bracing it on their shoulder, and squatted down like in a military style shooting stance. When I made the corner, the firing, as it starts to increase, I can see the sliding glass doors, the blinds or curtains or whatever it was closed. But I can see, because of the darkness inside the apartment, I can see the flashes, the muzzle flashes. So at that time, Sergeant Mattingly's down. I believe they're either pulling or dragging him, but it sounded like a lot of commotion. Like they couldn't get. I didn't know if they were getting John. I didn't know if John was down and they couldn't get his body out, or if he was. But all I could hear was the firing, and I saw the flashes. I thought they were just being executed because I knew they were helping John, because John said, I'm hit, I'm down. And the gunfire intensified. So I was almost under the impression at the time that they were either all getting sprayed with bullets, or as they were trying to move him out of that breezeway, he was shooting at us through the wall, or them, because I now had a shot, or I now had my only option was to turn fire, and I did that to the muzzle flashes. And I want to be specific about this. I had already seen where the threat was. I saw where he was positioned in the hallway. He was at the end of the hallway, and I never went in the apartment other than I stepped a couple feet in with SWAT later, and we'll get to that, but he was straight ahead as that door came open. He was all the way back in that hallway, as if his back was to this. He couldn't go any farther in the hallway, and there would have to be a branch off to the bedrooms. So when I made that corner and I heard and saw what I just described, the muzzle flashes, I returned fire at the angle that I believed him to still be shooting from, because I could still see those muzzle flashes and hear it, and the fire increased like almost like an automatic type weapon, or what in my mind was an automatic weapon, was the AR-15. I was certain at that time it was an AR-15. I was returned fire through at that, where the target was, through the sliding glass doors, and it did not stop. I could still see the flashes. I continued to move to my left, and I don't remember if I shot moving or stopped and shot, but I returned fire, and then I continued moving away from the breezeway, and I can now see the bedroom. I don't know if it's a bedroom. The room, the next room over, which would be now, I would be in perfect alignment. I could see the muzzle flash, or I could see the intense like fire flashing through, and the curtains or blinds, I think, were closed in that room also, but I could see it lighting up the room. That, when I returned fire through that window, whatever room it is, then it stopped immediately. It was almost like the target had stopped firing. So I could see, I guess, my peripheral, so now that I'm positioned outside looking at the side of my store, that they have gotten John out, or they have doing something between some cars. I don't know if they fell or what was going on, but it sounded like a big old commotion, like of people wrestling around on the ground. So I knew there was plenty of people. There was nobody trapped back in the hallway now. I knew there was plenty of people to tend to John. I went to the primary channel. I think I might have been on the wrong channel, because I think I might have been on three, and I'm supposed to be two. But I got on the primary channel and said a car number, and I said I need some cars to Springdale, officer had been shot. And I specifically remember, that I asked for the B cars to come with, because I knew we were done and all busy tending to John, whether it be getting him out or treating him. They were, I knew Tony had a tourniquet, or yeah, he had a tourniquet. I mean, I think that's, Lieutenant Hoover might have said that. But I remember hearing somebody, I never even turned around, I don't think, at any point to look at them. Because my attention was addressed on these two windows and the breezeway. I thought the guy was actually advancing, but by the way, the sound of the last shots I heard from inside the apartment, he was advancing out toward us. I was afraid, and I had a super helpless feeling, knowing that I had a handgun, and even though I had my attack vest on, and this guy had an AR-15, and he was gonna, I felt pretty helpless. Like, there's no way we can challenge this guy with an assault rifle. So I watched the windows. As the B cars started to approach, there's some weird fence in the middle of the parking lot. I don't know how or why, but there's a fence across the parking lot gate. And I could see the B car, hear the B car come up, and I could see his lights. And I think his name's Officer Combs, which I didn't know before this, but I told him to ram the gate. I wanted the car to come down to get to John so he could take him farther out, maybe to the ambulance. And I was super frustrated because EMS was there with us, but EMS was nowhere to be found. And so I called on the radio and said, please tell EMS to come up the hill. An officer's been shot at 10:30, and I think I said that multiple times. And then I repeated on the radio, maybe a couple times, that we need B cars with long guns. This guy has an AR-15. So I took off, or had the new flashlights we were just issued. I actually sat it on top of one of the cars and kept it illuminated on just a random car in the parking lot towards the sliding glass door, and then I moved over to cover some the other room windows. Because if that guy comes out or starts shooting back at us, I wanted him to shoot at that flashlight that didn't have me behind it, and I wanted to kind of stay hidden behind cover. It seemed like forever, I know it wasn't, but it seemed like forever. That officer ended up ramming the gate like I told him to, and got to John, and I think they took him farther away, or turned him back, maybe to a safer location. But I just maintained a visual on the apartment, and then kind of delegated spots to the B cars that were showing up with rifles. Everybody was spaced out really good, did a really good job. A couple of guys had like tripods in their guns, and everybody got behind cover. And I told them what windows were in play, or what was in play, what apartment we were looking at. I think SWAT came over the radio. I think it was my sergeant, actually, because Lieutenant Fahn is in SWAT. But I think he is the one that came up on the radio and said to me, Brett, can you send me pictures? We're on the way. Can you send me pictures of the apartment, like what you have? And so I took, I think, two pictures and texted it to my sergeant, so because he was coming with the SWAT, the rest of the SWAT guys. There, so they would know what they were encountering. They were briefed separately from us. They were briefed at SWAT in reference to the three warrants on Elliott, the same block. I don't know if their knowledge, if any, of our briefing or logistics at that location. So that's what he asked for, and I texted him that picture. We did a call out for anybody left in the apartment or anybody was in the apartment. And that's when I got a gentleman that I've never seen, an African-American male subject, came out. I think he had his cell phone in his hand. Came out and we did like a felony walk back, a traffic stop type thing where I had him walk back. Canine officer Nemo arrived with his dog, and I think that kind of, the guy was not very, he just wasn't listening. He wasn't doing things that were the opposite. He just was like, you know, it's hard to walk backwards, or, you know, that kind of thing. And I don't recall exactly what he said, but I think when the dog got there, it really actually started to listen, because the dog was barking or whatever. I put him on his knees in between two cars, and I handcuffed him along with another beat officer, if I don't know their name. We handcuffed him. I asked him if he was injured, and he said it was not. If he needed medical attention, he did not. And I asked him who else was left in the apartment. He said his girlfriend, and I believe he said she was dead inside the apartment. And he's asking, you know, what was going on or whatever. And I'll refer that conversation to body cam, because I think that's all on the patrol was. And I don't remember exactly what I said. It was that conversation, or you heard, needing medical assistance, who's dead? And he said, my girlfriend is dead inside the apartment. And immediately my mind was like, did we come to something that already happened? That's what flickered in my mind. Did him and his girlfriend have it? Did he kill his girlfriend prior to us getting it? That's what I kind of, in my mind at the time, thought. And he said, no, she was shooting at you with her 9, or her 9mm. I don't remember his exact words, but I'll refer to the body cam. But he said that she was the one that shot at us, and that she was dead in the apartment. The B car, whoever it was, then transported him away. SWAT team arrived. I don't want to say at times, times kind of was a blur, but within maybe five minutes, the SWAT team arrived and they made entry and cleared the rest of the apartment. And I kind of followed in behind them, but I only went maybe into the breezeway, a couple of steps into the breezeway, and they said it was clear, and they started to back out, or come back out of the apartment.
So, let's start off where you left off. You said that you came into the breezeway with SWAT security department. Did you get into the apartment?
I think I took like 2 steps maybe into the apartment.
Okay, were you giving information related to, you know, the apartment or occupants of the apartment?
I believe somebody said there's a deceased subject here, and I can see directly where I had been prior, where I'd seen the shooter standing. There now was a female laying kind of in a slumped position, and she appeared deceased, and that was the location. But I never went up to her in contact with her.
At that point, what did you do? Just kind of go from that, as far as where you went out?
I maybe took 2 steps in, I believe, like where, you know, you would wipe your feet off, and then I think the SWAT guy said it's clear or something, that conversation happened, and I turned back around and came back out. But I never went through the apartment or anything like that.
Where'd you go after you left the apartment?
Back out to the parking lot.
Where did you go from there?
I think still remained in the parking lot. I didn't get my car or anything. I was kind of maybe wandering back and forth. I think they had already had John either in the EMS or he was gone at that point.
Did you take any more of this action after that?
No.
Did you ultimately end up in the VIU office? Where did you go before the VIU office?
The hospital.
Did you go by yourself? Or did you ever make contact with your support?
Yeah.
At the VIU office?
I believe, and I don't know everybody's in peer support, but I believe there was one person at the hospital that was from peer support, and then the chief was there, and I shook hands with the chief, and he said, you know, we're glad you're okay. John looks good, or John's gonna make it, that type of thing. Because the chief was there prior to me getting there, and I spoke with him there at the right outside John's room. I went in, John's family was there, and he Detective McKinney. And John was conscious. I think he was probably medicated of some sort, but gave him a hard time. He was good, and that was kind of the reason that it off.
We have a couple bubbles here, and they're both in the same area. The first bubble is labeled for record, photo number one. It is a photo of the entire area, you know, where the incident location took place. So we labeled the actual apartment building where the incident occurred as apartment or building A or A. And then the gate for reference B. As you see, I mean, there's a, I wouldn't say considerable distance, but it is a little ways from the apartment, the gate. It separates the two different apartment communities. Prior to the incident, you all were making your approach in your vehicles. How would you characterize the apartment living community to get to this point? Is it easily accessed, or is it?
It's extremely difficult and confusing. I personally had been, we had done a search warrant when I was in a major case a couple years prior on this street here, and I do not remember the name of it, but I remember passing it, like, hey, we've done a warrant at the dead end of this street, and I think there's a church or something down there at the dead end. And I remember passing that, and I said, that looks familiar. And we came actually up this hill, and I'm not sure what direction, so I think that's north.
East,
okay. We came, I guess, south up St. Anthony, maybe, and I'm not here with Third Division at all. Up St. Anthony, and up a hill, and then we actually came up here and came all the way across, and then we winded down through. It's kind of like, where, this could not be. So that's what I was thinking. That was maybe the last or second last car in the set of cars or the caravan. But we ended up, so building A is here. I parked maybe right near the end of the building because there's a dumpster here, and I parked in just a regular parking place here. But we came from, to answer your question, I guess.
No, I think you want.
Okay.
It's a hard place to get.
Right. We were in this kind of south, and this is where I unloaded from, and they kind of were more just parked in the middle of the parking lot, like, police do, just kind of parked there. That, I found an open parking place and parked in that spot.
You talked about wanting to do one beforehand, and to your knowledge, Chris, you said this, Mike came close to eyes, you know, he had eyes on the target location.
But he was the one that was familiar with the case. Like I said, we were kind of summoned because they just needed bodies, and they specifically needed my or a dog for each location. So that's why. But he was the point of contact, and I believe the VO for that address.
Okay. And this photo here, photo number two, is just a closer of the actual building where the incident took place. This is just so I'll identify. For the record, this opening here is the breezeway that leads into the apartments in question, particularly in the apartment four. And to describe the apartment building, it's a two-story apartment building, and there's four apartments upstairs, there's four apartments downstairs, totaling a number of eight apartments. And this building is split in half. If you look at the building at the top, there'd be, because of the layout, as you saw that night, apartment four was on the east side of that opening, and then apartment five would be on the west side, and then there's two apartments on the north side, three and two.
Right.
I didn't mean to say five. So it's one, two.
I know what you're at.
So there's dwellings behind on the one side of the apartment, and there's dwellings on the south side, so north and south, that's dwellings. So you guys are approaching the target location, and you all enter this breezeway or opening to access, you know, to get to where the door is.
Right.
So as you said, you know, you're not completely in the very back of the stack, but you're in the rear of the stack, if you will, and for simplicity purposes, we're gonna talk about the door in question, apartment four, we'll look at it as we're looking at the door, so the left and right side. So, before we ever get to the entry, you know, you have a verbal exchange with a resident on the second floor. Can you go into detail about that exchange? I mean, kind of as much as you remember.
I remember he came out and wanted to know kind of aggressively or not friendly, like, it wasn't like a nosy neighbor, it was more of a I guess, questioning us as to why we were there, or I don't remember the exact conversation, except he was, I told him personally to go back to his apartment numerous times, police, and I feel like he shut the door and then opened it right back up. And I told him again to go back to the apartment. That's when John, or Sergeant Mattingly said, just ignore him, or whatever the case was, because he came out, and he wasn't out over top of us. He was more, I could see him in his doorway, but he had taken a couple of steps out of the apartment.
And you described him as a black man in his 50s?
Probably some older guy. Yeah.
When you meant older, did you mean like gray hair older, or just
his facial look older? I don't remember if he had any hair.
So were you looking up at the top of, like, further down by the steps, or were you looking?
I was maybe, as the steps go up, I was maybe halfway back the steps and looking up at him, so we can see each other and address each other. They were kind of under. That part of the staff was under, so they couldn't even seem to address them. I think it was maybe me and Detective Campbell were the only ones that I could see.
Okay. So you had a verbal exchange with the second floor resident at some point, you know, Mattingly or whoever decides, you know, this is drawing too much attention away from what we're supposed to focus on. And then how long do you think you guys knocked on the house and like, you know, you're verbalizing and your police, you have legal authority to be there, search warrant.
I kept repeating. Some other people had said that, I believe, or announced also, but I remember saying it at least 5 to 6, 7 times. And in that time frame, it probably took, because of the exchange or interruption, I guess, from this guy, we waited maybe 30 to 45 seconds for somebody to come to the door, and nobody came to the door.
So there was a decision made by command on the scene that you guys weren't going to wait longer this year.
Correct. And I don't know if Sergeant Magley made that call, or Lieutenant Hoover made that call, but they were further up in the stack than I was.
So the time of entry, or the time of force is put on the door, what I'd like to do is, I'd like to the best of your knowledge, so if this is the door, okay, and left, you have who?
I think Sergeant Mattingly, Lieutenant Hoover, Tony James. Now, I remember Tony James, I forgot to say this in the other part, but I think it's relevant. Tony James, when we were walking up, I believe Tony James had a bunker, or a shield, that's a ballistic shield, which we rarely, if ever, carry. I don't even know who has one, except people that are assigned to SWAT teams. But I remember Tony had one when we were walking up to the apartment after we got out of our cars. They're all to my left that I can remember. I don't remember where Miles was at the time, or Detective Cosgrove, if he's to my right or left. But I feel like he was behind Nobles, closer to where I was. And Nobles is the one with the door to his right, is framing from his left side to the right side.
So would you be in front of Miles Cosgrove or behind? Because we're talking about 30, we'll just give it, I don't know the exact measurement, but we'll do the max, 36 inches. So it's basically about maybe a thought exact width of this table. And we know Mattingly was on the left-hand side, because he had first light.
Right.
And Nobles had already breached the door. And the door for the door handle was on the right-hand side, therefore the hinge to swing it back was on the left-hand side, so it opened right up. Is that correct?
I do not.
So
I don't know which way it
came. Yeah, we'll just say that's the way it
goes. Okay.
So at that point, we have Sergeant Mattingly, Tony James, or Lieutenant Hoover, in somewhat unknown order. And on the right side of the door, we have Nick Nobles, who has the breaching tool, who's not armed because he has the breaching tool. Is it you then, Cosgrove, or is it Cosgrove?
I don't know if we were standing beside each other, or we switched or we moved when Nobles came back, and if we moved around him. I can't say Miles is on my right or left, because I don't know.
Okay. So, as the door's breached and it's opened, You know, tell us about that again.
Sure. As soon as the doors breached, I came either from the ready or down after the ready, and that's like I described it with the targets at the range. So it was like an immediate threat. And I saw a large figure and down, hunched down with what appeared to be a long rifle. And I saw a large muzzle blast and, you know, got the percussion from the gun. I think that's a combination of a bunch of things. The sound had nowhere to go and the fact that it was a direct on shot to us.
So, help me understand this. So I'm going to stay back just for a visual. So this is a door opening. We know Matt and me is somewhere in this, on the left-hand side. Because remember, we're always referring to it as looking at the door.
Okay.
Nobles is now done his job. He's out of the way. Are you right here next to Matt and me, or is Cosgrove and then you? Remember, we basically have just enough room for my two.
I know John was to my left. That's all I remember. And when I came around, I don't know if he came in as I did or he was already standing in that light or the opening door. So I don't remember if much, if any, from this edge of the door to that wall, if there's hardly any room at all. Maybe there's, I don't know if it's flat or there's some room for them, for Tony and John to stand off the side so they're at least a little offset from the door. I don't know.
So the point that entry is beginning, you see muzzle flash and what you think is a long rifle pointed at you.
A large figure in the shooting stands with a rifle.
And could you tell, you know, who or what that figure was? Did you assume that it was a person?
It appeared to be a person, but like I said before, it was dark in the apartment. So I think when I got that muzzle flash, it illuminated maybe the silhouette of all I could see was a fire from the muzzle, and I could see a large figure, but it appeared to be in a military style, like shooting stance. Like it was just, they were waiting on us to get that last few hits in and get the door up to fire.
So at that point, and again, I want you to correct me if I'm saying something that's not right. At that point, you referenced in what you said earlier, are you aware or not aware that the battle has been shot? You just know that the threat's being used against you.
I saw the threat and heard it, but like I told you, I knew we were in a crappy position where we're at because we could not get off the sides or get out of the line of fire easily. So that's when I don't remember if I addressed the threat with gunfire, or if I just spun around and get out of there when I felt the percussion. Because I knew that was what I was going to stay in that spot much longer, being for obvious reasons. And as I'm clearing, coming down the breezeway, I either hear mention of, like I referred to earlier, somebody or John set up and hit, and they were down.
So at that point, you know that a threat has been used against you, and now that an officer has been shot.
Correct. I knew both of those things prior to making this corner, I guess, on the back.
So you come out, and then, you know, for visual and for me, you know, you have the stairwell that's open, and what I mean by open is that there's metal steps that you see through, and you now come up to this point, which you can't see it from the shadow in the picture, but the staircase comes down. And you're standing. Are you standing right here? I'm not gonna let you.
I made this corner and I don't remember. I don't even know what this thing is right here. But
this is it's kind of hard to see because it's a satellite picture, but this is like a handicap.
Oh, right.
And there's not much, but maybe a single step down. But you can see right here. And then this is the sidewalk. And this is just like a void area, like maybe they had some like decorative rock or some landscape rock or whatever. So, you know, again, this is just on memory. Are you more like right here as you know, this is after you know, what you just stated.
Right.
And then I'm like, I wish to go back through again you know, what you did once you got to that point?
Sure, I came out, I hooked this in, and I don't remember how far I came out. I wouldn't think I would have came far enough into the lot, like to the actual paved portion, like the blacktop. And I returned, because I knew my threat was here, we were here. I returned my threat through at the muzzle flashes that were coming, that were illuminating this sliding glass door right in front of me.
So when you're standing, you're literally looking at me, and when you say right in front of you, it is literally right in front of you, like it's the sidewalk is attached to the patio that we're speaking about.
Okay.
So as you're standing right here, glass door, you see obvious muzzle flash inside the car.
Right, I see muzzle flash still, and this is the point where I think it actually increased, where I kind of got caught up a minute ago, because I don't think they had gotten him out of this breezeway yet, and it actually intensified. It went from, you know, I don't even want to estimate how many shots, but it was a volley of shots, and then it was a boom, 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 and I was, you know, like I said, I thought they were taking fire here down, because I knew they were on a shitty spot, and whether he was shooting at them through this wall, I didn't know at the time, but I kind of felt like they were sitting ducks. So that's when I returned fire, like I said, through here. And I don't know if I stopped to return fire or if I was shot. I feel like I shot from two different locations. I shot a volley of shots here, and then when I still see, when I moved over to closer to here, those red cars parked at, I can still see this light lighting up in the hallway or bed, whatever room this is, this window lighting up, flashes and gunfire. And that's when I decided to put additional rounds through here, because I knew the threat was straight on from this door and straight across from this window. That's the last place I saw the guy shooting with the gun. And that's where I felt at that time to protect myself, to protect my partners that had already been shot, I returned fire through the window. And as soon as I returned fire through that window, the threat stopped. The gunfire stopped.
So at that point, you just, you know, back out, took a position to cover, and then as you stated, you know, you just got a full job. Other guys were, you know, treating Sergeant Madeline for his injury. And you just provided cover.
Correct. They triaged him here. I think there was some cars parked here in these spots. They triaged him somewhere out here, and I think once the beat fired up, I think they moved him that way. But I never paid much. Not that I didn't care, obviously, but because I knew they had their job to do was take care of him, get him out of there. I also knew none of them were talking on their radio. I didn't hear anybody, so I wanted to know why EMS was still down here at the church. And we needed them up here, obviously, because it's kind of confusing, I know, for everybody, the directions to get up there. And then I dispatched, you know, or since the officers there, I kind of gave them a job or told them what was in play. I also, what I skipped over earlier is that I was also afraid we were going to have, I wasn't familiar with this complex, had I ever been there, and I was thinking, this is my recollection, I've never been to this complex. I did not know that this apartment didn't end here, somewhere in the middle. I was afraid this guy, whoever, the shooter was going to go out, because I know for a fact we didn't have the back cover, which I thought was weird, why didn't we have the back cover? I might have sent somebody around back or yelled at on the radio, we need the back cover. But that was my concern, the guy was going to be gone out the back window, because I did not know where that complex ended on that side.
Would you say you had very little information if really, no.
Just what I gave the
briefing. I mean, what was the briefing detail? Other than, you know, the obvious, the target, you know, the location itself.
I feel like we had more information about the LA address. Those were pretty detailed. But honestly, I didn't, other than the names, which I knew none of the names they mentioned, I think they had their names or pictures up on the board. But I was not familiar with any of them. I never even contacted them.
And during that briefing, how did you all consider this location? I've heard it referred to as a soft location, a soft target.
That's what it was referred to a couple times. And I think the reason for that is that the SWAT was not going to do this. They knew that she had been getting packages delivered here. And I believe they followed a target or two to or from this place. I was given that at the briefing, but I didn't know any further anything about that. The guys I was with, we were all from, I mean, we're all in CID, we're all aware of Metro Cox, but we were all kind of the older guys were put with it because this was going to be the easy location. I felt that, that's my opinion.
Right, so the CID is broken into smaller little groups,
right.
And you're not in the group that was that had the investigation pertaining to this target.
And neither was anybody there. We were just kind of a hodgepodge of people thrown together, but the place-based contact was detected.
And this location was, even the lead considered not a real, like, high priority.
Right, I think there was if I remember correctly, they either said the score out loud or the score in the matrix was minimal, which doesn't require a SWAT consultation or a SWAT to do it. So, yes, approaching that, or especially when we're down here at the church, I guess your question is, did I anticipate it as a soft entry? Yes. And we don't use that term very often because usually it's an unknown,
right.
And then there's a high risk, and then the SWAT does that. But it was a female, little or no record, and I don't believe she had a history of any guns or firearms or anything like that at all.
Did you get much information about the apartment itself, like the location, the parking lot, the building?
I believe there was a picture of it on the board of it may have been in front of the board, maybe it's a Google photo, I don't know. But I mean, we knew it was a fourplex, I knew it was the door to the right, I knew we had a video. I don't remember anything out of the ordinary that would make me believe there was a reason this would have been a problematic or a tactical situation would have arise from the briefing.
And the other guys that you were with, do you normally work with them?
I do not. They were all in, they're all in different units for me, I think. You're probably more aware of it, but everybody's kind of sprinkled around from the airport unit to career to DCS to command center.
And then, so I'm correct here, not understanding this, is that, you know, you base the information you forwarded on to patrol and when the patrolman showed up, the rifle information based off something you visually saw, which is why you disseminated that information for officer safety and told officers who responded. Is that correct?
Yes, and the reason I did that was, like you said, what I saw, 100% sure that guy had, at that time, 100% sure he had a long gun. And I knew it wasn't a shotgun. I'm kind of familiar with shotguns from hunting as a kid, and I knew it was not a shotgun. One, because shotguns don't shoot that fast and don't shoot with the same percussion. And with the B cars were coming out, I did not want the B cars to pull up here and start taking long rifle rounds. I wanted them to come up mentally prepared to be able to challenge from a distance with a long gun. Obviously, you don't want the pea shooter like I had behind the car taking cover. I didn't want to put them in danger. I wanted them tactically be safe because I knew all my guys were gone, or I felt like they were, had moved from here that way, either with the
two back or the units,
right? Because that was, and I felt like I was the only one left. I don't know who else stayed with me at the time. I think maybe Miles was still there, but he was off, maybe kind of giving directions to the guys. And then, because obviously the B car, you come up, you're coming at 10:30, officer's been shot. You know, you don't have any idea. It's chaos, but I wanted them to know what threat, this was a threat in the hallway, because I really thought the guy was advancing either at us when we were leaving or as they were getting drawn out of that hallway, and I was fearful he would just come out with, you know, with a rifle.
So do you know if anything was moved around the scene when you were out there? You guys were out walking around for safety? Was the scene altered at all?
I know that I did not know how many shots I did not count, and I think some people actually count their head while they're shooting, but I did not count, or no, that wasn't even a priority, obviously. But when I moved back, after I fired, when I moved back from cover, I wanted to reload. So I, on one of these car trunks or hoods, I don't remember which it was or what exactly it was, I did it, kept my eyes up and kept reloading, and then I put my, well, I just didn't drop it, I don't know, but I put my magazine from my gun back into my, one of my pouches, so the empty well, in my magazine well, on my gun belt, and so I had a full mag if he continues to come out and advance towards us.
And this is after you completed your fire?
Correct.
And you said you went from there to the hospital. Did you secure your dog? Did you take him home?
He stays, he stays with me. He can stay back there for hours. He's used to me. Sometimes we're riding out for 5 hours on your break. So we didn't stop and take a rest break or anything.
So you come back to PA and you still have your dog?
Correct.
Did you review the mind image related to this at all?
No.
What you know, got you like
I don't know how to pull up other, I guess you can pull up other people's body cam, but I'm not real good about that, like how to do it.
Are there any questions I'm going to ask you or any other information you have that may be beneficial in this case?
I think we're going to talk about
it. Is there anything you want to say for the record before we end? Everything you tell me the truth to the best of your knowledge.
Okay, Detective Fogg, from what we just heard there, from the interview with Detective Hankison, to reiterate, Detective Hankison said that he saw the figure at the end of the hallway with an AR-15.
Yes, ma'am.
And that was one figure he said he saw. Did he say that he didn't know whether the door opened to the left or to the right?
Yes.
Then he moved around, he said, to in front of the sliding glass door, where he said that he saw muzzle flashes through that sliding glass door.
Yes.
With the purple lines and the purples.
Yes.
That we saw yesterday. And then did he say that he returned fire through that sliding glass door at the angle where he had seen the shooter at the end of the hallway with the AR-15?
Yes.
And then did he say that the flashes continued and that he moved down to in front of the bedroom window and fired and saw flashes through that bedroom window?
Yes, ma'am.
And that he kept firing through that bedroom window, again at the angle where he thought the person with the AR-15 was?
Yes.
And then is that the bedroom window we saw yesterday with the black curtain in front of it?
Yes, ma'am.
And did he say that when he started shooting through that bedroom window, that then the flashes stopped?
That's correct. Yes.
Do you all have questions?
Did you say both of the sliding glass door and the window in the back had black curtains over?
The curtain inside on the sliding glass door.
That's what?
Sliding glass door, that it has a curtain, a full length curtain, and vertical blinds behind the curtain. In the bedroom window, there is.
No, I'm trying to see the color, so. Because, like, I'm with nights. So that black window, that black curtain that she has in the back is specifically. So you can't get in the light.
I said the curtain in the window is black.
Yeah.
The curtain in
the front is
by the sliding glass door is not black.
Yeah, but that's what you said in the situation.
That's inside of the south.
That's the
bed. Mm-hmm. Which is not a farmer's bed.
Being at the moment
Councilman, you're correct for that, yes.
All other councils just unanimously and cross-cut.
I believe you're correct, yes, sir. And that's, just, you are hearing several accounts of what happened. And so that's the challenge here, is to try and keep everything as part of the entire picture. Yes.
I don't think I have a question, kind of a real resolve answer. They asked him where he went after the incident. He said he went to the hospital. And they kind of asked him to speak to anyone, and I think he said he spoke to his chief. Is that about the extent of it? He mentioned that there was someone like a pure person.
I believe after the shooting incident, Louisville provides a peer support group to talk to the officers involved in this.
Right, but it didn't sound like he did his
That's, he doesn't reference that.
Yeah, that's right. She was thinking he spoke to his chief.
Yes, sir.
Okay. According to him, he's standing next to the hardware of a crossroad. And crossroad says he, this guy's kind of standing next to him. They don't know they're standing next to each other, whether on the left or the right. The problem I have is crossroad and this guy right here said that they saw a shooter in his stance at the end of the hallway. How do they see that standing in his stance?
If we are. That would be a question of deliberation.
Some of these questions that you have for us, we just can't answer. That is part of, you have to listen to the statements by the officers. You kind of put it together in your mind.
Okay, well then, that's only part of the question. The next question, the same question is, one of them said that they were the first person to go right behind that one. Well, this guy says he was the first person having right behind Manuel. If there ain't something like this, they look down through the door because ain't no two people gonna be able to get through that door at the same time. I'm not saying that they didn't both see it, but one of the other ones have to be right behind Manuel to be able to see the shooter's stand. And both of them said, come on.
Well,
credibility of these interviews, of these statements made in these interviews, are you to judge the credibility?
Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, last question I have. About the stack, as we've heard this come up several times, when they get to it later, is there, in any of the evidence that you're presenting, is there ever an official stack that was laid out in their plan that will be provided, or is it all based on their
Their accounts.
Yes, we hear from the board.
We will hear from Mr. Walker later.
One other thing I want to tell about the shield. He mentions that he said it was unusual
for the
shield to be there when there wasn't SWAT there. Is that
normal?
Is that normal?
Is that his normal? Sure.
Detective James carried it that day. I don't know what's normal for LAPD, but what we do know now is, what we've heard is, Detective James had that shield. He was, you know this, he was here.
Nah, he was right. That's what
he said. Detective James.
The
Jewish ship. Yeah. He was in
Seattle
area.
He
was here.
He was second.
Good, and that goes back to the different accounts of the staff. But the shield was not put in place specifically from what we've heard so far.
Well, it was just that he had stated that he didn't recall. He thought it unusual that there be a shield.
I don't know. We don't have this information. I don't know if at some point in the past they came to get on the floor. We don't have that information. So I don't know why people can get this information. We can't speak that. We won't give that information.
Yeah.
obtain a copy of the audio recording of the interview with Detective Mike Campbell?
Yes, ma'am.
And when was that interview conducted?
That interview was conducted on March the 13th this year.
The night of the shooting?
Yes, ma'am.
And who conducted that?
That interview was conducted by Sergeant Anthony Wilder and Sergeant Omar Lee of the Local Medical Department's Public Integrity Unit.
This is Sergeant Anthony Wilder of the Louisville Metro Police Department's Public Integrity Unit. Today's date is 3/13/2020. The time is 06:05 hours. We're present at 3672 Taylor Boulevard at the Public Integrity Office. This will be a recorded statement from Detective Mike Campbell. The statement is in reference to PIM case 20-019. Present with me are Detective Campbell and Sergeant Omar Lee of the Public Integrity Unit. Detective, are you aware the statement is being video and audio taped?
Yes.
Does this meet with your approval?
Yes.
Please state your full name and spell your last name.
Michael Campbell, C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L.
What is your code number?
2186.
And where are you currently assigned?
I'm assigned to the Criminal Interdiction Division, the Place-Based Investigation Squad, PBI Squad.
Place-Based?
Yeah.
You said PBI?
Yeah, that's what they call it.
I know this unit, the division, was recently created. How long have you been in that unit?
Since January 2020.
And before the reorganization, how long have you been in our office?
For about 2 years.
How long have you been on the board?
Over 22 years, between 22 and 23.
Are you under the influence of alcohol, drugs, or any other intoxicants at this time?
No.
Are you taking any kind of medication that would affect your judgment or your ability to think clearly?
No.
Did you sustain any injuries during this situation?
No.
Did you receive medical treatment?
No.
What type of uniform or clothing were you wearing at the time of this incident?
I was wearing this black t-shirt, some green cargo pants, and a black tack vest with police across the front.
And with the exception of the tack vest, are you wearing the same clothing right now?
Yes.
Because of the statutory requirements of KRS 15.520, I'm obligated to advise you that this is a criminal investigation, not an administrative investigation. However, you are not the subject of this investigation. Knowing this, are you willing to give us a statement at this time?
Yes.
All right. Earlier this morning, members of the CID unit were, I believe, executing a search warrant, and you were present?
Yes.
Just in your own words, if you could just start where you think the logical starting point is, and to describe everything that happened tonight, and just kind of walk us through what you witnessed.
We were executing a narcotic search warrant at 3003 Springfield Drive, apartment 4. I was going to be the verification officer. So prior to the other unit, other detectives getting to the location to execute the search warrant, we were attempting to do simultaneous search warrants on Springfield Drive and on Elliott Avenue. So I was watching the location prior to the search warrant, the other units getting there. as they executed the search on Elliott Avenue, and they came down the hill on Springfield Drive. I pulled in behind the train of cars. We exited the cars. We walked up to the apartment four, the door of apartment four. One of the targets of the search warrant, the main initial target of the investigation, the main target of the search warrant, I believe, was at Elliott Avenue. We knocked on this door repeatedly. It was dark. We knocked on the door. You can see there was a light on, like a television or something on the living room. You could see it from the outside window, sliding over. We knocked on the door, we announced police multiple times, and we paused at the door, everyone's paused at the door. When they decided to breach the door, they hit it. I believe Mike Nobles was on the ramp. He hit the door two or three times. I believe it was three times, and the door popped open. As the door popped open, we began to receive shots from the inside of the apartment. I was the last person in line. I couldn't see the person shooting. I could hear the gunshots, and I could see the reaction of Sergeant Magnum. And so we started to pull back. I moved to between the two parked cars facing the breezeway, where I could see the door and both the sliding glass door that faces the parking lot and the opening of the door to the apartment. Everybody else starts running back, trying to get to cover, better cover. Lieutenant Hoover was dragging Madeline back. There were several gunshots. Lieutenant Hoover was dragging Madeline back because he had suffered a gunshot wound to the upper leg. We stopped briefly between the cars. They tried to get a tourniquet on Sergeant Magnum. Then we moved, and there was a white SUV parked in the center of the parking lot. That wasn't ours, but it was parked there. And Lieutenant Hoover and I believe Tony James, Detective James, and Nobles, Detective Nobles, moved Sergeant Manley behind the vehicle. The truck is parked in the middle of it. It was better cover. They applied the tourniquet. I held my attention on the window and the door. You could hear somebody in there. We're trying to get medical attention to Sergeant Manley. Somebody brought up a car. They put Sergeant Manley in the trunk of the car, and they drove him out the front, took to the ambulance. The ambulance that was waiting at the end of the street. At that point, Mouse Pots Grove, Mouse Pots Grove or Hankinson had called for the SWAT team to come up and help clear, but they were all on Elliott Avenue, that's on the other side of town. So they could hear people moving around. You could hear a person moving around inside the apartment. So we started calling to him, and he came out the front door. Detective Hankinson gave him commands. He walked back. By that time, as he was exiting the apartment, several patrol uniform officers were on the scene by that time. They got him back, handcuffed him, and they moved him to a marked car that was away from him.
From your position, were you able to observe which officers, if any, returned fire?
No. I was on the back edge of the building, as in the breezeway. I didn't see when the sheriff. I could see what I thought were rounds coming out. I was in a bad position, so I backed up between the cars, so I don't know for sure who actually return fire or not.
Do you know any of the targets of that were supposed to be in that apartment?
Who's it? Brianna Taylor, Jamarcus Glover. They were supposed to be in that apartment.
I'm not sure what was the first name from
Jamarcus. During the course of our investigation, which was a narcotics investigation, we saw Jamarcus was observed picking up packages from that location. He used that location as his address on some other documentation. So we thought he lived there. It was one of the places he was living there and gave the drugs to him.
Approximately how many shots do you think maybe were fired from inside the apartment?
I have no idea. Several. It was just a lot of gunfire. I can't give you a number. More than, it seemed like more than five gunshots I heard. But I mean, there was a lot of gunfire. And I'm sure some of it was returning fire, so I couldn't determine the difference.
Do you know where Sergeant Madden was positioned at in the stack when he was reaching?
As he was like in the one spot. He was literally the first person through. So when the door popped open, Madden was in the doorway.
When the subject came out, did he make any statements that you heard?
He made a statement about his girlfriend shooting out, and he said they heard us knock, but I was focused on the door and if there was anybody else coming out of that door, so I didn't talk to him really. I know he was talking to some of the other detectives briefly, and some of the officers that were out there.
And once this kind of situation calmed down, the scene was considered safe. Was there any discussion or did you hear other people talking about did anybody see who actually fired the shots or anything?
No, I didn't discuss that with anyone. And I was not in a position to see who fired the shots. See the person that was shooting out.
Sergeant Woody?
Yeah, so I apologize, but on the stack here going in, how many was in the stack?
There were seven of us total.
Seven total out there, okay. So seven total. And there was four in the stack to make an entry. And you're talking about door, so when I got to see it was door number four.
Door number four.
And it's under the staircase.
It's under the staircase, and as you walk into the breezeway, it's
so
on the
that's the breezeway, the staircase is to your right, it's underneath that. So you're under the stairs. Were all seven of you kind of in the stack, or was it a few in the stack, a few in the back, a few in the front?
Yeah, I was walking up, and we had stopped in the breezeway. So we weren't bunched up real tight.
Okay.
We were spread out. We knocked on the door. We were doing several warrants tonight. This one was going to be, we didn't think the target was there. This one was going to be the easy one.
So who knocked at the door?
Sergeant manually knocked, not repeatedly. And we announced police, police, police. People were, other detectives were saying police. We were really loud. So we had not been announced that we were the police multiple times.
And then who was, do you call was number two in the stack?
So the person with the ram was Nobles. Hoover was up close, so he's probably the third or fourth person back. Magley was at the door. I was the last person, I believe. So in there had to be Tony James and...
James is in front of you.
Yeah, and closer to Magley had to be... Miles Cosgrove. He's probably three. If Hoover was four, Cosgrove was three. But I was the last person. I'm not completely.
Been in some of those stacks, came here in the hall, just kind of trying to find a better paper.
Right. Hoover was kind of close up there. I was almost to the edge of the building. I was just in the breezeway.
Okay. And then, so you're basically at the end of the steps?
I was just inside, like, at the end of the steps, where I can just see in.
And you could, so you said you did your shooting once.
The door.
So the door pops, so they hit the ram, so it takes two hits?
Two, maybe three hits.
Okay.
Door pops open.
Door pops open, and you can distinctively tell that there was going to
be coming from the inside.
Okay. And then you don't really know how many here?
No. I started to move back because we weren't going in. And I wanted to get a better cover. And there's a side, there's a big sliding window there.
With the little patio in the
yes.
front there. So you slid to avoid that window?
To avoid that window, move to the engine at one of those cars parked in the driveway. I mean, the parking lot there.
To cover behind the car?
Actually, I slipped. I think Hankinson tied up and we slipped and that was quickly pulled back.
Do you know where Hankinson was? Front, middle, back of the step?
He was probably in the middle or something. He was in front of me, so when we all started pulling back, I thought he was in front of me.
So you kind of maintain there, if the usually vehicle's covered, you kind of maintain there as the guy gets called out,
mm-hmm.
and then they're rendering first aid to Sergeant Manley.
Right, by the time that guy was coming out,
they burned him. Okay, so they've already moved him out of the scene. Guy comes out. You don't hear him say, you do hear him say a couple things.
Yeah, he's talking to some of the detectives briefly. I mean, nobody's interviewing him,
Right, just spontaneous statements.
Yeah, and so the patrol person took them.
And you're kind of still maintaining cover on the house in case anybody else is in. Yeah, so who else is there? And you don't see anybody else come out?
I don't see anybody else come out. SWAT, by that time, SWAT gets there.
They clear. So you never actually made entry into the apartment?
No. They cleared it, I went up and tried to make contact with all the apartments to make sure they were okay. There's a lot of contracts.
In checking the other residents to make sure they were okay, did any of them hear anything or say anything we need to go back and follow up on that you can recall?
No, they just said they heard shots, a bunch of shots. I talked to the people on the second floor. I believe Lou Fahn talked to people. Sergeant Fahn talked to people on the first floor. Because he had gotten there by that time.
Is he up there as a SWAT commander? Is the sergeant on SWAT?
No, he's sergeant on the box.
Oh, is he? Okay, I'm sorry. I thought he was in SWAT.
He is.
Oh.
But he was.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Two rows.
Yeah, but I think he was on the other one, and he had gotten out there about the same time as SWAT came back.
So this was a kind of trying to hit four different targets?
Five different targets,
kind of simultaneously?
Yeah, close together. There was four spots on Elliott Avenue, and this spot on Springfield Drive.
And I'm assuming, because you're trying to hit them all simultaneously, and they're all kind of connected within the drug trade.
Yes.
The subject that did come out, did you see him by chance? Like at all? Could you identify who it was?
Yeah.
Know who it was?
I don't know.
Once the door popped open, was there an opportunity, and you may not fully know this, I'm going to ask it, but was there an opportunity, or did you hear anybody give any verbal commands to anybody as far as to, you know, show your hands or anything like that?
As soon as the door popped open around.
Okay.
It was like pop, and then pop, it was like boom, pop, 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 pop.
So, just to kind of, paraphrase and make sure I've got everything. You were part of the team that went to 3003 Springfield Drive, apartment number 4. That was one location of multiple search warrants that were being served tonight. You were there prior to doing surveillance, and then the rest of the team showed up. You fell in at the rear of the vehicles and at the rear of the stack. You all approached the door, knocked and announced several times, gave opportunity to enter the door. The decision was made to breach. I think you said Mike Nobles, you think, had the ram, struck the door. Once the door flew open, Sergeant Battling was the first one in the stack and in the doorway. As soon as the door popped open, shots were being fired from inside. And then at that point, there was multiple shots being fired, and you're not able to determine how many total shots or how many from each specific person.
Correct.
At that point, officers began to scramble for cover, and I think it was Lieutenant Hoover was pulling and batting them back to cover.
Right.
Once everybody kind of got to cover, you provided cover on the house. Other officers began treating Sergeant Mattingly, eventually being on the trunk of a car that was brought in to kind of carry him out of the scene to EMS. Additional police uniformed officers responded, assisted with setting the perimeter. You all began hailing, and the subject came out, was taken into custody. At some point, you overheard him saying that his girlfriend
had been shot, and he had heard you all knocking, and then SWAT, by then SWAT had showed up and cleared the rest of the house.
That's accurate.
The gentleman that came out, were you able to give a description of him?
A tall black male, looked to be in his late 30s, early 40s.
Do you recall anything about his clothing?
No, I mean, he was clothed, he was fully clothed, but I don't recall anything in particular.
I thought I had a follow-up and slipped my mind, so I'm going to say
Are there any other questions that we have not asked you, or any other information that you have that you believe may be beneficial to this case?
No.
Is there anything you want to state for the record before we end?
No.
Is there anything you told me the truth to the best of your knowledge?
Yes.
All right, we will conclude the statement. The time is now 06:30 hours.
Do you all have any questions for Dr. Paul about this interview?
Yes. Always. He's a back of staff, and the difference in the one you had incident and the one who part of it was supposed to be against him, actually had moved over on the left side of the staff and turned it on the back of it. So when the door was breached, and now he was the first one through that door, Firewall rushed up behind me, that was a fired shot. Firewall was saying that he saw a person thinks a shooter staged in the end of his hall. He was saying he had no time to get to that door to see the shooter because he fell back behind this detective, this camera, moved over to the patio door. There's no way he could have put an end up to that door to see the shooter's face before he did this. And I don't know why I'm
that's what I said.
I just want to make sure that.
No, I got one more. I got a question.
Yes.
He said that he heard he said that the boyfriend stated that he heard them knock.
That's what Detective Kim said, yes.
Several times.
Yes, that's what I was getting ready to say. It's time for a break. So I'm going to walk right.
Thank you.